There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Drive Live Talks this afternoon is all about cars, automotive, moving around the city safely.
Drive Live Talks Automotive.
All right then, we have a guest with us today, and it is, we've talked to Phil before, but only over the phone. First time we've met. Phil Clark is Technical Director, Road Safety and Enforcement, 4E Road Safety and Transport Consultants. Knows his stuff. Phil, nice to have you here.
Thank you, Tim. Nice to
see you. So we've seen, and this is really our kind of headline topic today, speed limits. It's been the big road story this week, for sure. On Sunday at midnight, 12:01, I suppose, the speed limits changed on the E311, the E611, in the Emirate of Dubai. They went from 120 to 110. Effectively, the cameras flash at 131, I believe. That's when you would be fined. Has it had the desired effect so far? Too early to tell?
It's too early to tell whether it's had the desired effect, yeah. I mean, 1 week in, it's still a new speed limit. It's still bedding in. I think it's good that the RTA and Dubai Police decided to do something about the route, the road accidents on those two particular roads, Mohammed bin Zayed and Emirates Road. Whether it's going to be effective or not, only time will tell.
And Phil, we got a few figures in yesterday, and it was the fact that we've had 2,300 speeding violations recorded in the first 2 days after those new limits were enforced. So 1,400 on Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Road and Emirates Road with 900 violations. So that was on the 18th, so it had been in play for 3 days and we'd had that many. I mean, that's an early indication. Maybe people haven't seen the signs, or maybe they're choosing to ignore them.
It's probably a bit of both. Some people haven't changed their driver behaviour because they don't feel the need, and others probably are just, you know, it's an old habit to drive up there at a particular speed and they've carried on doing that. So I think the violations, you would normally expect to see a spike when a new speed limit or a reduced speed limit is introduced. That's not uncommon.
Well, the thinking behind this is something has to give, doesn't it? Something has to happen. We're looking at trying to get to a point where nobody dies on the roads. That's as simple as we can put it, through accidents caused by driver behaviour. The thing is, how do you deal with driver behaviour? We've got drivers here from all over the world with different, I guess, standards, different attitudes, different mentality to driving, places that have different limits when it comes to speed. You're trying to unify everything. Where on earth do you start with making sure that drivers adopt the right attitude, Phil?
Well, I think the first thing is you've hit on a good point there, and that is that you've got so many different nationalities with different driving experience and backgrounds.
Yeah.
But what you don't have here is any equivalent of the UK Highway Code. There's no road code as such. So there's no benchmark that sets out the standards that are expected of drivers here. Yes, there are standards set when you go through the driver training and testing program. But a lot of drivers here don't go through that program because they get exchange licenses, people from the UK, Australia, that sort of thing. So they're not receiving the training. And I think if you expect people to drive to particular standards, you have to tell them what those standards are. And it's not just about the law and violations. It's about things like lane discipline. And that's a huge issue here, both in terms of creating congestion and influencing the way people drive, because people will change lanes to go around a slower moving vehicle that's in lane three when lanes one and two are completely empty.
Do you think it's the fact that we do maybe perhaps change our style of driving once we get out onto the roads here in the UAE? Do you think that's a big problem?
It is a big problem because you have to adjust your driving style to what's going on around you, the driving environment. And it's a very competitive, some might describe it as aggressive, driving style here. We've got a lot of large vehicles, we've got wide, straight, fast roads, and we see aggressive tailgating following too closely when people want to get you out of the way so that they can move on a bit more quickly. We see people pushing in queues when they're leaving one road to take a slip road off onto another. They don't queue, they force their way in at the front. And that causes ill feeling, and then you get this kind of competitive trying to stop people making lane changes, trying to keep people out, blocking, and none of that is conducive to road safety.
What's the single big problem when it comes to road safety, do you think? I mean, is it the speed kills? Is it manoeuvres like tailgating? Is it the fact that people are changing lanes without indicating? What do we need to address first?
Well, it's all of those, and it really comes down to the attitude that people have towards their driving. If you look at the causes of accidents, the police cite following too closely, tailgating as one of the top causes, speeding as one of the top causes, and lane changing as one of the top causes. I think the problem there is that you don't have an accident, just generally you don't have an accident because you're driving fast. It's the combination of things. If you're driving too fast, too close to somebody in front and something happens, then you're not in a position to deal with the unexpected. And that's another thing, that people are not really looking well enough ahead, and therefore the unexpected is catching them out, when actually, if they were looking well enough ahead, it wouldn't be that unexpected.
The old anticipation word.
Absolutely, yes. Observation and anticipation, and it's a very reactive driving style here, rather than a planned driving style.
Okay, so here's a question for you. If you're listening today thinking, oh, I've got the answer, then give us the answer, 4001 or via the free app. But if you think there is an option here that we could take to maybe make things better, be interested to hear from you. Phil Clark is with us. We're talking about essentially the new speed limits that we've seen on Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Road and the Emirates Road, the E311 and the E611. Has that had an effect? We've seen that there have been a lot more fines since those limits were introduced. What does that mean? Are people taking it a little bit easier? Are they thinking more about safety? Is that the point of the change, to make people think, to get that message across? Has it worked? Has it not worked? What do you think will work? It'd be interesting to hear from you. Plus, if you have a question for Phil, get in touch with us. Usual numbers apply, 4001 via the free app, or if you'd like to call, speak directly, 423-1010. Drive Live Talks Automotive.
Drive Live Talks Automotive.
I'm still getting used to that. You are listening to Drive Live on Dubai 103.8. Our guest today is Phil Clark. He's Technical Director, Road Safety and Enforcement at 4E Road Safety and Transport Consultants. Phil, thank you very much for coming in today. Now, Tim asked a few questions before the break. We're talking about what we could do to make our roads safer. We know there's been the reduced speed limit, and lots of people have got in touch. They've got a few comments for you. I'll put some of these to you and you can let us know what you think. We've had a text in from Bharat that says, I think they should somehow reduce the number of cars on the road. There's far too many cars on the road. Maybe we can improve the frequency of the metro to reduce the number of cars that we see. What do you think about that as a concept?
Well, Natalie, I think it's fair to say that getting people to use public transport is always a good thing to do to try and reduce congestion. We know that the metro is being extended at the moment, ready for the 2020 Expo, so that's a good thing. In terms of limiting the number of vehicles on the road, that's always a very contentious one. It is the approach that Singapore adopts, that it limits the number of vehicles that can be registered at any one time, so it can manage the capacity a little bit better that way. But it would be a very difficult thing to do here in Dubai, I think.
It would, I guess. Mick says, restrict new drivers to smaller cars. You do have a situation where you've got young people who perhaps are more carefree, let's put it that way, large engine cars.
Can I just jump in? New drivers, not necessarily young people, but new drivers.
New drivers, fine, but then young people when they're new drivers as well. So let's mix and match. But I take your point. But it is often the case, isn't it, that you do see inexperienced drivers driving very powerful vehicles.
Yes, you do. And certainly in some countries you have a graduated driver licensing scheme where people are limited to the size of vehicle, engine capacity, etc., of a vehicle that they can drive to start with. And restrictions on how many points they can acquire over a given period of time before they revert to being a learner again. Those things are done all over the place. You can try that, but I'm not sure that that is necessarily going to resolve the issues that you have here with the aforementioned aggressive driving and things like tailgating. You're just going to have a lot of smaller cars on the road. It might improve people's skills before they graduate to bigger ones, but I'm not sure it's going to be that effective.
And Christian says, kind of similar to what you've just said, far too little road manners, if none at all. Far too many unqualified drivers. It's pure and simple. I'm assuming most drivers get their learning in different ways. Don't blame the students. Blame the teaching that they've got. So I guess there's lots of people from all over the world. We've got different driving standards. But he's saying no manners and don't just blame the students.
No, I don't think you can just blame the students. But a lot of people have learnt in other countries. And as we said before, they come here. They don't actually learn here. They just obtain a licence here. It's an exchange. And going back to what I was saying about the road code and having some sort of benchmark and standards for people to drive, you could still have an exchange licence scheme where people have to undertake a test on that road code, sit in front of a computer for 20 minutes and answer a few questions in order to qualify to get your exchange licence. That may work. But I think, yes, there aren't enough manners, there isn't enough consideration. It is competitive and aggressive, as we talked about earlier.
It's a text in from Omar, who says, lots of drivers here, drive at night with no headlights on, turn on your lights. Do you know that is an offence? I was done for that. I came out of Dubai Airport, and I've been in the Bright car park, and I came out and picked up my wife and kids, and I'd forgotten my lights because I was chatting to them, and I got stopped and pulled over, and I was fined for it. Quite rightly, as well, but that is actually an offence. I know that. Here's a question for you, Phil. Should we have some sort of compulsory retesting, maybe when you get your licence renewed? What effect would that have? Something that could weed out whether you have some bad habits and correct them, perhaps, or if you have more bad habits than can be corrected immediately, perhaps some sort of enforced delay on regaining a licence, for example. Would that have a good effect? Would that change mindsets?
I think if you had retesting that was aimed at the right competences and skills, yes, it may have an effect. But the problem with that is that you would need to have the capacity to carry out those tests. There's a very rapid turnover in Dubai and in the UAE generally, with people coming here working for a few years and then it changes over. So there is a need to have a driving licence training testing system that could cope with that extra demand and at the right level, because you're not necessarily talking about basic sort of learner first licence level, you're talking at a slightly different level of competency.
There's an interesting text message that's come in, no name, and it's the principle of think right. It doesn't mean you're driving right, but move to the lane next to your right if it's clear, and then the next right lane is clear, move along to that. Too many cars are driving in the faster lanes, slower than the standard traffic flow, with lanes clear to their right, causing people to undertake them, which isn't safe. And I think that's a mentality that doesn't seem to be as prevalent here.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It's one of my pet hates. But we come down to what I said earlier. How do people know that they should be driving in the lanes towards the right? Who tells them that? Maybe if they've been through the learner driver scheme here, then they have been told that. But a lot of people just come here who wouldn't have been aware of that. And certainly in the United States, for instance, people pass on both sides. It's not really frowned upon there at all. It just seems to happen. So people get conditioned to the network that they're driving on.
Do you know, I remember learning to drive, and it was constantly, I mean, it's different in the UK because we drove on the other side of the road, of course, but it was constantly keep left, and go with the flow. Don't go too slow was something that was drilled into me very often, I think because I was quite timid when I first learned. It was very much about how to keep traffic flowing, which is about efficiency, isn't it? And that's kind of stayed with me.
Yes, it is. It's fine as long as the flow is the appropriate speed to be travelling at.
Oh, sure, yeah, yeah.
But yes, I think there's meeting other drivers' expectations as well. People who drive very, very slowly can create as many issues as those who drive too fast in a perverse sort of way, because they become an obstruction that people want to get around, and then you get the lane changing and you get the impatience and the frustration builds up, and then you get the bad driving habits.
Right. We're being very reasonable here, I think. This is one of those really emotive topics. A lot more text that we're going to come to. But here's a thought, Phil. I'm going to put this to you now. So what do we need to do? When we come back in a couple of minutes' time, we'll have a quick break, and then we'll come back and get your thoughts on what we actually need to do. What will have an effect? The honest answer from Phil Clark, what's going to have a real effect on making the driving better?
And maybe just a little bit of time on my pet hate, people using mobile phones.
Oh, she's doing that scrunching her eyes up thing. But, I mean, that's obviously very dangerous. I'd like to hear from you, 4001 via the free app. Phil Clark is with us. It is Drive Live Talks Automotive Cars Today, in particular talking speed limits and what we can do to make the roads at least a little bit safer. We've had speed limits changed on the E611 and E311 here in Dubai this week. That's all next.
This is Drive Live. Get in touch with the show.
Text us on 4001.
It's 10 minutes to 5 o'clock. Drive Live talks cars, automotive, speed limits in particular today.
Drive Live Talks Automotive.
Now, Phil Clark is with us. He is a technical traffic road safety consultant. Not sure quite how to make that pithier, Phil, but that pretty much covers it. Good to have you here. Lots and lots of questions to put to you. So, what we've seen in the last week are the two speed limits on Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Road and the 611, the Emirates Road, dropped. They are now at 110. Effectively, you are fined at 131 kilometres an hour. More than 2,300 speeding violations recorded in the first 2 days. We don't know how many would normally be recorded on in a couple of days on those two roads, but how much of an effect is this going to have, particularly on road safety? We're asking for what we can do. Been asking you what you think we should do with this. Loads of texts in. Luca, defence driving instructor. Confiscate licences of offenders. Also, read all the 172 codes of the RTA, and Lucid thinks that some of those are contradictory. Backing up your claim, Phil, that we need more of a unified code that people have to read when they go and get the licence.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is the first thing. You have to educate people, and you can do that through something like the road code, or you can do it through properly targeted and structured road safety campaigns. And then you can follow that up, where necessary, with the relevant enforcement to target specific issues that are a problem.
Right.
And that's where your driving license confiscation comes in. If for the most extreme offences, losing your license is probably the ultimate inconvenience and nuisance to most people.
You can't then go and hire a car. You are then effectively confined to Ubers, private taxis, and the metro, the tram.
Yeah,
you've got to
find some alternative means of getting around. But confiscating cars doesn't work quite so well, because a lot of people have access to more than one vehicle. But if you take the license off them, that's no longer an option. But I'm not advocating that for everything. I'm suggesting for the most serious offences, or for the people who persistently offend and clearly haven't learnt the messages from their previous violations.
We've got a message here from Zach that says, we need average speed cameras which will reduce some of the speeding. Static cameras do work, but a driver is able to slow down and speed up accordingly as they are aware of where they are, which sometimes, Zach says, leads to more problems.
Yeah, I think he's right, actually. The network does lend itself here to average speed cameras. And I think, I know that they are slowly being introduced now, but they are far more useful at effectively making people change their driving behaviour when it comes to speed, because it's not just a question of slowing down to avoid the snapshot and then picking up speed again. So, yeah, I agree, average speed cameras have got a very big part to play here in managing speed.
Zipper merging, Rob texted a little while ago. I have to be honest, I had to ask you what that is, but it is essentially, if somebody's coming out of a junction and there's a queue, you let that person out, you then move ahead, the next person at the junction moves out, the person behind you moves out, it's one for one, isn't it?
That's
and
right.
That is simple road courtesy and road manners.
Yeah, it's taking it in turns. You allow one out in front of you, and then, you know, it is just like a zipper, but it avoids the crush of three or four people trying to dive into one rather small gap.
We've got a couple of texts in here from Shaz and Luca saying sort of the same thing. They're saying apply fines proportional to the income of the person or the value of the car. And somebody, Shaz says, the number of fines should then impact on the insurance premium. Maybe that would put people off a bit more.
Yeah, once again, I think that's something that happens in some countries, that if you get too many fines or points on your license, or any in some countries, your insurance premiums will go up and become prohibitive. And there doesn't seem to be that link here between driver history, whether it be violations or accidents, with insurance premiums.
I did say to you, Phil, before the break, I'd come back to you for the answer, because you are, to all intents and purposes, the oracle this afternoon that we look to. But do you think that in simple terms, is there a simple answer? It's a very hard question to answer, and I get that. But what do you think? What's your opinion? What can be done?
No, I don't think there is a simple answer. There isn't a silver bullet. But I think you have to tackle this from the four E's, hence the name of our company. You look at education, you look at enforcement, you look at engineering, and you evaluate what's been done to see what worked and what didn't work. And if it didn't work, then you try something else. And if it did, then you have another go at it.
And Leon says, well, the problem is drivers aren't penalised. As we've been discussing, the car is penalised and impounded. The driver can just go and get another car and drive again. Insurance should be against the driver and not the car like it is in other places. Barrett texted in and said, one solution, get autonomous vehicles as soon as possible. And another one, ultimate inconvenience is jail, confiscating cars. To some people, if they have lots of money, doesn't have any consequences.
Yeah, I mean, there is a place for custodial sentences, but you are looking at the real extreme end of offending behaviour for that sort of thing. I don't think you can just lock people up for you know, fairly trivial things, however much of a deterrent it may be in the longer term.
Neil has a very good question. Can you see this one, Timmy? Neil asks, how are roundabouts navigated here? It seems different to where I'm from.
Don't even start me on this, because I learned one way and I've been put in my place so many times on this that if you're going straight, say a roundabout has three exits, okay, or effectively has four if you do a U-turn. Say you're going straight, you don't have to indicate. To me, as soon as you come off, you have to indicate that you're leaving the roundabout. I'm told that that's no longer the thinking, conventional thinking on roundabouts.
Well, if it's not the conventional thinking, then I'm in the dark as well. Because
I've been
my understanding. You would always signal immediately prior to the exit that you're going to take.
Yeah, because you're making a turn.
Yes.
Aren't you? That,
yes.
That's what I thought. I've been told that I'm wrong so many times on this.
Yeah.
That effectively you're continuing to go straight, so you don't need to indicate. And I've always argued, well, that's not how I was taught. But then, you know, it was Victorian times when I was taught.
No, I think roundabouts seem to be a contentious issue. Well, depending on where you're from and how you learn.
For lots of people, the roundabouts, for example, in the United States, are not a massive part of the road network, are they?
No,
it does tend to be signals.
They're not used very much. Yeah. And really, here on the major routes, they don't tend to be used very much. It's signalised intersections. But one of the problems is that you sometimes have too many lanes around the roundabout, so you have maybe two feeding into it, and then three round the roundabout and two on the exit. So you've kind of got this big wide space in the middle that lends itself to people not following lane discipline at all. So.
Okay, I feel secure in my roundabout discipline, which is good, having had you here, Phil, which has made me feel better today. Phil Clark has been with us. He's Technical Director, Road Safety Enforcement, 4E Road Safety and Transport Consultants. It's been good to have you here today. Thank you if you've texted in. Loads of questions we didn't get to, but Phil, hopefully we'll get you in soon. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tim.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.